Chapter 19, Just When It Feels So Hopeless. Estragon, I can't go on like this. Vladimir, that's what you think. Samuel Beckett, Waiting for Godot. After becoming aware of the origins of your buttons, how they play into your parenting, and what you need to do to diffuse them, you may feel more frustrated than ever. What you want to do is not necessarily what you can do. You may feel encouraged and stimulated after understanding the process, but then hopeless and defeated when you find that you're still falling back into old habits. Take heart and know that this is part of the process. The Four Stages of Competency. William Howell's Four Stages of Competency are used in the field of education to illustrate the progress of raising one's consciousness in any area of learning. The stages begin with the ignorance before something is known to the automatic ease of new learned behavior patterns. Learning to use a computer is a good example. Stage 1, unconscious incompetency. Life went on just fine before it entered my home. Stage 2, conscious incompetency. I know it will make my life easier, but it makes no sense to me. The programs are indecipherable, the language is gibberish, I feel really incompetent and I keep making mistakes. Stage 3, conscious competency. I've learned how to do what I need, but I'm cautious and nervous when I'm venturing around a new program. Stage 4, unconscious competency. I feel at ease with the programs and confident I could learn any new ones. I feel connected and at home with my computer and am reaping the benefits. Applied to parenting, the four stages of competency are as follows. Stage 1, unconscious incompetency. I react automatically with no consideration for long-term consequences. I feel exhausted and resentful. Stage 2, conscious incompetency. I'm aware of the effects of what I say and do. I have learned what I want to do differently, but when face-to-face with my combative child, I can't do it. I feel guilty, angry, and incompetent. Stage 3, conscious competency. With continued practice and support, I'm focused on using new skills. I'm effective most of the time. I feel hopeful. Stage 4, unconscious competency. I almost always respond automatically with effective communication. I feel successful, fulfilled, and have fun with my family. We tend to drift back and forth between stages, depending on what area of parenting we're dealing with at the moment. Reading bedtime stories to a preschooler may fall into stage 4, easy, relaxed, connected communication, while setting limits with a teenager may fall into stage 1, where automatic demands and reactions abound. The age of the child may determine what stage you're in. Many parents are more effective with infants and get more impatient with older children, and vice versa. Most parents who are looking for answers to parent differently find themselves hovering around stage 2, conscious incompetency. This is a most discouraging stage, knowing what to do, but not yet able to do it. Some give up, claiming parent education is bunk, rationalizing their parenting as good enough, and falling back on the old standbys. Others hang in through the pain and upheaval to reap the rewards, and hugely rewarding it is. To be in stage 1 is to be unaware, to think your child doesn't know any better, to blame your child for how you feel and what you do, to demand that your child be who you want, to react automatically. Each time you question yourself and ask whether or not you're creating a gap, you're raising your consciousness to stage 2. You are reaching stage 3 when you learn to take responsibility for yourself and your actions, when you become aware and stop your reactions, even some of the time. The more you practice, the less often you slide back to stage 1 or 2. The more conscious you become, you will find new and effective automatics slipping into your parenting. What was once hard and even painful to put in place becomes second nature. When you would never dream of saying the things to your child that used to slip out so automatically, you know you've arrived at stage 4. The frustrations of stage 2, conscious incompetency. Unless you've reached this point and learned all you need to change your patterns and diffuse your buttons, you will probably find yourself in and out of stage 2. You may feel angry at yourself and guilty that you're still overreacting. Take heart. This is normal. Do not give up. Without discouragement and frustration over our failings, we would happily remain in stage one. Unconscious parents are not discouraged by their parenting. They find fault with their children, not themselves. Ignorance is bliss, as the saying goes. Without disruption, turmoil, upset, and conflict, change will not occur. There's no need for it. So the good news is that feeling incompetent and frustrated means progress is underway. Consciousness comes in degrees. Think in terms of higher and lower consciousness as opposed to being conscious or not being conscious. Imagine a dimmer switch on your consciousness instead of an on-off switch. In The Art of Living Consciously, Nathaniel Brandon says, "Consciousness can operate at higher and lower levels of intensity, and in any given situation, the question is not whether I am conscious, but whether I bring to the occasion the level of consciousness I require to be effective." The Benefits of Failure. Thomas More, author of Care of the Soul, claims that we need to appreciate our failings and view them in a new and creative light. Instead of seeing failure as a reason for defeat, Moore says that accepting our failings and limitations allows us to descend into the mystery in failure, which allows us to see through our inabilities and not overly identify with them. Remember, our children could never have learned to walk without falling down again and again. If we weren't accepting of our failures, we would have little tolerance of others and no vision of a better way. We don't like our dark places. We tend to keep them closed off in our attic rooms and rarely share them with others. One of the greatest benefits of parent education groups is that parents, often for the first time, share their dark side. To be able to describe a nightmarish scene with a child that a parent would never want anyone to know about, and hear three other parents laugh and say, "I know just what you mean, that happens in my house all the time," is an uplifting experience. The laughter alone is healing. If we cannot allow ourselves mistakes and failures, how can we teach our children that making them is part of learning? When mistakes equal failure. Harold and Marjorie were concerned about their 7-year-old son Coleman, who was pulling his hair out in clumps. He had gotten into the habit of rubbing it across his upper lip for self-comfort. Whenever he made a mistake or was reprimanded, he would go for the hair. Sometimes he added, "I'm so stupid. What's wrong with me?" Harold confessed right away that he feared Coleman was learning it from him. Harold's motto is, "Mistakes equal failure," and failure is unacceptable. It is his crusade to make sure his children learn to do everything the right way, his way. When Coleman spilled water in Harold's car by lifting the cup by its cap, Harold asked him how it happened. Coleman said, "I'm dumb." Trying hard not to put his son down, Harold said, "You're not dumb, you're just careless." Harold felt compelled to point out what Coleman had done wrong to cause the spill, how to pick up the cup properly, and that the car was going to smell of mildew. Harold could not let the mistake go by without corrective criticism. He had no faith that Coleman would learn on his own without careful instruction on proper cup lifting. Instead of learning how to correct a mistake, Coleman learned that he was inept. I asked Harold what would have happened to him if he had spilled water when he was a child. "Oh," he exclaimed, "I spilled milk once at the dinner table, and my mother upended the whole table. Everything went flying." I asked him what he had learned. He said, "Never to spill my milk again." Harold does not see that what he learned from his mother was intolerance of mistakes. He has not connected his past with his present standards. His pain remains protected, and so it's hard for Harold to see a different way to handle mistakes. The pain is triggered, and criticism erupts when anyone, including himself, makes a mistake. "But there are ways of doing things correctly. Why shouldn't I teach him? I can't just let it go and let him think it doesn't matter," he argued. When I suggested saying nothing about the water spill, yet asking Coleman to blot up the water with paper towels and take responsibility for the spill without a lecture, Harold agreed that that would have been a good idea. Harold was also able to see that Coleman's hair pulling was in reaction to the pressures he felt to get everything right. Coleman has a far more sensitive temperament than Harold. takes the criticism to heart, defines himself as stupid, and punishes himself by pulling out his hair. Strangely, he uses the hair for comfort as well, to ease the pain of the self-punishment. As Harold began to understand Coleman's hair-pulling habit, he stopped reprimanding him for doing it, and Coleman's hair has grown back. Harold still believes Coleman has to learn the right way to do things, but he's gaining better awareness of the pressure he puts on himself and others. Right now, he's struggling between stage one and stage two of conscious parenting. The uses of guilt. There's bad guilt and good guilt. Bad guilt causes immobilization, stuckness, and together with self-judgment provides yet more excuses to give up and stay stuck. Oh, I'll never get it right anyway. Who am I kidding? Is the voice of bad guilt. Good guilt can be a motivator, a shaker. I feel so bad about the way I reacted. Why did I do that? Is the voice of good guilt. It can move you to change. A workaholic parent who misses his children's sports events and music recitals, who rarely sees them during the week, and who doesn't have much of a relationship with them, may react to his guilt by buying his children's love with lavish presents. This is bad guilt. Or he can pay attention to the guilt and use it to examine his priorities. This is good guilt. Listen to it. Guilt is essential for keeping our behavior in line with our values. Don't try to push it away, deny it, or get down on yourself for having it. You'll only feel more guilty. Does it have something constructive to tell you? Underneath feelings of bad guilt, resentment is often lurking. Resentment toward people or events we perceive as causing us the guilt. If I feel like a failure as a parent, I will most likely feel resentful toward the child who is making me feel that way. We criticize ourselves so often for feeling guilty that we compound the guilt by feeling guilty about feeling guilty. We never allow it to just be. Our personal judge wreaks havoc. We are harder on ourselves than anyone else could ever be. Remember Angelus Arian's advice to greet our demons and judges when they come knocking at our door. Welcome them in, but lead them directly to the guest room so they do not destroy our house. Often we blame ourselves for our child's misbehavior. The guilt can be immobilizing. It's all my fault, leads a parent to claim responsibility for everything her child has done wrong. She readily ignores all other factors and variables, including the other parent, friends, school, temperament, and the child's emotional turmoil. By taking responsibility, she thereby releases her child from the responsibility that may be his. Her self-blame is internal, self-absorbed, and passive. How have I managed to become such a failure? I meant to be such a good parent. I can't believe I've screwed up so badly. This is not a parent who can easily decide to change old habits. The guilt most likely runs deep. Change requires the belief, I'm worth it. Revisiting a situation. You can always go back over a situation you feel guilty about, even days or weeks later. I often ask parents to remember an incident from their childhood that felt especially hurtful. Then I have them imagine their mother or father coming to them today and saying, "Remember that time when I... dot, dot, dot? I want you to know that I've never forgotten it. It was very hard for me to apologize at the time, but I was wrong. I made a mistake, and I'm sorry." Tears well up in their eyes, even if the incident happened 30 years ago. It's never too late. You're teaching your child a valuable lesson when you say, "I'm sorry I did what I did. It must have made you feel very bad. I'd like to talk about it again and come up with a different solution." Or, "I've been thinking about what you said, and I've decided I was wrong." We want to teach our children to reevaluate what they say and do and to apologize when they do something they're sorry for because it feels right inside, not because we tell them to. Shouldn't we do the same? If we don't model the behavior we want our children to develop, we are in effect saying, "Do what I say, not what I do." I don't want to let on that I was wrong, but I want you to admit you were. If you do not set yourself up as always right, you have less far to fall when your child inevitably takes you down off that pedestal. You may even remain intact. You do not need to apologize for your feelings. What you do with your feelings is another thing. If you're angry, no need to apologize for the anger. But if you react inappropriately in that anger, you can apologize for your reaction, yet still acknowledge your anger. Apologizing works wonders unless it happens too often. When you find yourself apologizing all day long, your bad guilt has gotten the better of you. You're using it rather than taking responsibility for your behavior. Your child is going to tune you out eventually. This is your cue to use that guilt as the kick it's meant to be. Parents worry over lost authority when they admit a mistake and do not stick to their guns. Many parents think they must stand on principle and follow through, even if they realize it was a mistake set in anger. When you do what feels right in your gut, regardless of what society or your mother-in-law thinks you should do, your strength and true authority will be seen in your integrity. Be honest with your children as well as yourself, and it will come across to your child as genuine authority. Holding your ground even when you wish you hadn't said what you did is false and dishonest authority, and your child will know it. Mother blame. So many parents in my groups talk about the tremendous pressure they feel from their own parents, in-laws, friends, the media, or the elusive they to parent in the ways they are struggling to leave behind. Parents feel scrutinized by the eyes of the world telling them they're either disciplining too much or not enough. If children misbehave in public, parents feel humiliated and blamed. It's no wonder we feel so responsible for our children and try desperately to control their behavior. So when parents work hard to change old patterns, there are countless outside forces pressuring them in the opposite direction. They feel caught between a rock and a hard place. "It's all my fault" is a big button that especially plagues mothers, as we are still reeling from generations of mother blame. Mothers feel judging eyes at the supermarket, at student-teacher conferences, and in line at the bank. It's hard to shut out the stares, the comments, and the advice, and to trust yourself to know what's best. It's difficult to stand firm in the midst of this stress and defend a new philosophy of parenting, especially when your child has yet to respond perfectly. The impatience and self-blame mothers feel in this predicament easily translates to anger and rage, readily transferred to the children. It's imperative that we give ourselves a break, breathe deeply, and be mindful of the fact that we cannot be all things to all people. Mothers especially try to live up to the standards of perfection, and it's so easy to fall short. The doubts. Hand in hand with guilt come the doubts about everything. Am I saying and doing the right thing? Will I know what my child needs? Do I know what I need? Can I trust myself? Can I trust my child? How much do I push and how much do I step back? Should I have done that or not? The conscious parent, stages 2, 3, and 4, is often filled with doubt. It comes with the territory. We will always be walking that line, trying to find the balance when we are aware and parent consciously. Taking the time to question yourself, negotiate, and debate the issues before you decide means that you're willing to be vulnerable, to make mistakes, and be human. The unconscious parent, stage 1, knows for sure, does not question, and never doubts. Then there's the worry. Worry, however, will take you to a stuck place. When we worry too much, we hang on to control. We overprotect and hold our children back from living their lives in order to protect ourselves from worry. Let the doubts come. Step back, disengage from the worry, and ask what the doubts are telling you. They will be there. They are the mark of consciousness. So many parents worry that they have already done harm. Give yourself a break. No one is perfect. You have parented in the best way you could, given the knowledge and awareness you have had up until now. Now you know more. Now you have more information about yourself. Now is the time to take steps toward change. Even if you knew you wanted to parent differently, you were not ready until now.